ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The texts were short, but I kept going and it started to get weird. I knew there was something not right because my gut was starting to churn. I don't think any of our kids at this age are calculated predators, but it felt a little bit like that. I was horrified that my boy could do this.
Just imagine you're checking your teen's phone, maybe to make sure they aren't being bullied or groomed or, you know, watching things they shouldn't. And then you stumble upon some messages where your child is hassling a classmate for nude pics. Oh no. So do you talk to your child about what you've seen? And what can you do to stop it from happening in the first place?
I was so shocked because I felt like we had done everything right. What else could we do?
In this Parental as Anything Teens, we are talking about nudes. Now, you might be wondering, where the hell is parenting guru Maggie Dent? Well, for this season of Parental as Anything, Maggie has handed me the reins as we gallop headfirst into the hardest period of parenting, the teen years. Strap in, people. I'm Bec Sparrow, and when I'm not hosting podcasts, I'm in schools talking to hundreds and hundreds of teens about how to navigate these tricky teen years. I've also got three kids of my own, and they are 15, 12, and 10. And so listen, I am in the trenches with you, and I know what it's like down there. It's a swamp. And if your kids are still young, as in they still think you're cool, then this is still for you because this stuff is coming for you like a freight train sooner than you think, and whether you like it or not. I don't need to tell you what it's like. Teens can be moody, horny, impulsive, secretive. They grunt at you and they're smelly. Oh God, the smell. But we are here to help. In every episode, we're going to hear from you about what's keeping you up at night as you navigate the teen years and grill a bunch of experts on really practical advice for getting through it unscathed. Well, as much as possible. Something that as parents we all dread, but we all need to face, is the fact that teens are sending and receiving nude pics. And other teens are asking for them. Sam found some pretty shocking messages on her son's phone, and like many of us, she didn't have a clue what to do.
It was not fun. My son has a phone, and we made it very clear when we gave him that phone that we would keep an eye on whatever, you know, he was on, check messages sporadically.
I just want to jump in here and say that Sam is what we're going to call every parent in this season of Parental as Anything Teens, you know, just to make sure their teens don't disown them.
And then one night I found a conversation. It was weird because the first couple of things were like, just he'd obviously responded to a picture that this particular girl had put on a platform in her bikini. And sort of had said, you know, nice pic, where were you, et cetera. But I kept going and it started to get weird. The texts were short, but I knew there was something not right because my gut was starting to churn. And as I went through the messages, he just got more and more persistent.
And what was he saying?
More please, really short messages, more please, send me more. She was like, more of what? And eventually he just went, nude pic. I knew something was wrong, but as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, my God. And I think that the asking for the picture bothered me, but not as much as of how persistent he was about it. Even when she had said no on numerous occasions, he kept asking and he kept hassling her, and that's probably what bothered me more.
You know, it's interesting because from what I've read, boys and girls send the equal number of nude pics, but girls are more likely to have been hassled and badgered for them. So this is an exact example of that. Was this a girl that he knew from school? Like, was it an actual person that he knew? Yeah.
Yep, it was a girl from school, and I didn't know her personally, but he had talked about her. She was in his class, and it was disappointing for me because she had actually expressed that she quite liked him, and I think that this changed it completely.
And how did the conversation end? So he's going, send me nudes. Come on.
Yeah, she blocked him. She said, if you ask me again, I'm going to block you. And he did, and she did, which I'm thrilled with her response.
Same.
My instinct was to go and rip him out of bed because I'm like, I consider myself to be a feminist. We talk about this stuff. And I was furious, but I knew I couldn't do that because, A, it wouldn't have gone very well. And I just needed time to process. But, yeah, I did not go to sleep for ages afterwards, but went through his phone. I didn't find anything else. But I was horrified that my boy could do this.
You've been way calmer than I would have been. So gold star to you. So you're calm.
Now.
Are you thinking I'm going to talk to my husband first, or are you thinking I'm going to talk to my son as soon as he gets up in the morning?
My husband had already gone to bed. I was reluctant to wake him up because I think that he would have been less controlled. I think I needed to get my head around it, and I didn't want to shame my son for wanting to see a naked girl, right? Because naked bodies are what we, you know, that's okay. It was more around the way he was going about it that bothered me the most. And I felt like I needed to gather my information and work out how to tackle this. The next morning, I just put on a poker face, and off he went to school, and then I did some research, and I think I spoke to my husband throughout the day.
What did he say? What did he say when you told him?
Oh, he was furious, but he was just like, oh my God, I have no idea what to do. No idea. The biggest thing for me was I couldn't find anything online about what to do when the boy is hassling the girl. It's all about how the girl is to respond.
Everything is about teaching girls how to police boys' behaviour, and there's so little about explaining, because this is the soup that our boys are swimming in. What did you say to your son?
We went into his room and we closed his door. We said we needed to talk about something, and I can imagine his brain just would be going, which one? What did I do? And I just said, I found some messages, and I said they really concerned me and we want to talk about it. And
what did he say?
He just went under his doona and hid.
Oh my God, my head just wants to fall off because this feels so out there and so stressful. But here's the thing, this isn't just Sam. This is so many of us in this situation where we find out either that our teens are hassling someone for nude photos or they're sending them. And the thing is, at that age, they really don't always understand the ramifications. And the truth is, parents contact me about this stuff all the time. So Sam is definitely not alone, and I want to stress that. There's so much shame wrapped around all of this stuff about phones and nudes and porn, and not just if you find nudes on your child's phone that they've taken themselves, but that real shame I imagine she's feeling that her son was the one badgering a girl about them. Here to help Sam, and let's be honest, all of us, is Sophie Lee. Now, Sophie is a clinical psychologist at the Black Dog Institute, but you might know her face and her voice from ABC TV's Old People's Home for Teenagers. She sees loads of teens and their families in her private practice. Sophie, we need your help. This is common, right? They're asking for and sending nudes.
Yeah, I think it's much more common than parents realise. For teenagers, it's just part of the normal way that they're developing and fostering romantic relationships. It can be quite fun when it's consensual. And then for parents, it's really challenging because the virtual world that our teens are living in is often very invisible to us. And I think one of the things that is good to keep in mind is that our children are going to make mistakes. It doesn't mean they're a bad person, but it is a complex world and a new world that they're navigating.
I'm sort of thinking about, you know, how parents can have these awkward conversations when things go pear-shaped and they screw up. We want them to think, oh my God, I've got to tell mum or dad, not, oh my God, mum and dad can never find out, which is what I was like at 14 and 15. I was like, oh my God, mum and dad can never find out. Whereas that's not the relationship I want to have with my kids. I want them to go, I've screwed up. I really need mum and dad's help.
Yeah, in terms of having these difficult conversations with young people, there's lots of reasons people do things, and we might make assumptions about why they've done things, but we might not be right. So having that curiosity, asking them questions, getting their point of view, understanding how they're feeling about the situation, that's really important, and the listen and don't judge.
Sophie, what comes after this first awkward conversation?
I think once you've had the conversation, help them plan what their next steps might be. So what they want to do from now on, what they maybe have learnt from a challenging situation in terms of maybe how to deal with cyberbullying or you know, how to establish consent and what to do if someone's not consenting in this case, which is essentially you don't keep requesting the nudes, you accept that they've said no and then that's it.
Sam said that when she tried to talk to her son about what happened, he hid, right, under the doona. Now, that's not unusual, of course, that our kids just don't want to face us. We want to have different tools in our toolkit of different modes of communication for our kids, because we know that eye contact is super awkward for our kids when they talk to us. So I think, you know, if they have the ability to text us or email us. My own daughter and I, we have a journal that we write in. So when something big has gone down, I write to her in a journal and put it on her bedside table, and she can then take it and write back to me. And we have a rule that we never talk about what's in the journal unless she wants to. We only communicate by writing. So would you agree with that, that it's important to have different ways that our kids can open up and talk to us and tell us stuff that doesn't involve us staring into their eyes?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, different things are going to work for different people, but using any form of communication that works for you makes a lot of sense. Another way to get around the, you know, staring into each other's eyes while having these difficult conversations is having these conversations while you're doing something. So it's still an in-person conversation, but you might be cooking dinner together or setting the table, or, you know, you might be driving somewhere in the car, so you're not sort of facing each other directly. So it can be less confronting for them.
Sam did the right things. She paused, she didn't react in the moment, and she planned what she was going to say.
It was really about focusing on how persistent he was being. Even though this girl had said no very clearly many times, I actually had screenshotted these text messages and I showed him. I'm like, look, she said no here. Then more, you hassled her again. No, you hassled her. I'm like, what made you do that? And he was, I don't know. And I believe his answer. I don't think any of our kids at this age are calculated predators, but it felt a little bit like that. I was so shocked because I felt like we had done everything right. What else could we do in that situation?
So this is the other bit of this story that I loved, Soph, is that Sam had access to her son's phone with his knowledge. So obviously when she got him the phone, they established the rules that she had his password and was allowed to sporadically keep an eye on what he was doing online. It was never allowed in the bedroom. It had to be charged downstairs overnight. Fantastic. What other boundaries can parents put in place to protect their teens from creating and sharing sexualized content?
I think even before considering boundaries, it's important to think about your teen's maturity. So are they responsible? Are they able to stick to rules? Are they able to have open conversations with you and seek help when it's required? I think they're really important questions to ask yourself about your teenager, because that will help you understand what kind of boundaries you should put in place. So a teenager who doesn't have that maturity and doesn't have that capacity to stick to rules and be responsible and those sorts of things, you might want to give them technology to keep in touch with them for security reasons, but you may not allow them access to all of the social media apps just now.
You know what, Sophie, I call that whether or not they've got a good internal handbrake. And
yes.
I've got one child who does, and the other two, mate, they are driving off the road, I'm telling you. They're out of control. So I'm like, I don't think you'll be having a smartphone anytime soon. So let's look at this. Many tweens, so primary schoolers, start begging for a phone from a really young age. What do you think, Sophie, what do you think parents can do before or when their kids get their first phone to educate them about what they might see or the pressures they might end up feeling?
Make sure you teach your young people that it's okay to say no. So educate them on personal boundaries, how to express their personal boundaries, so identifying what is an appropriate online behaviour to them, and how to respond if someone does cross those boundaries. So things like making sure they know how to block people, making sure they know how to report it, making sure they know that they can come to you for help and support in those sorts of situations. And then, like, I guess the third thing is really we want to create that environment that our teenagers and our young people know that they can come and talk to us about any of these things, so that we have this very, very open, non-judgmental relationship with our children when it comes to talking about technology.
One of the things that struck me about Sam's story is that she's teaching him one thing at home and then he's going to school and being pushed in a completely different direction by his mates.
One of the things that I've found since this has all occurred and our conversations continue with our son is that some of this is almost, and I hate to say it, but it's almost a sport. And while I'm trying to get my son to be empathic about thinking about how this girl felt, etc., he's going to school and the boys are bragging about this stuff. They're sharing these pictures. But it's like I'm here trying to do this with my son and I believe he gets it because that's the type of kid he is. But then he goes to school and he's being egged on.
Sam's doing all the right things as a parent, but her son is also at a stage where his friends and that social currency he gets from them is really, really powerful. You know, the other thing I'd say, Sophie, is this behaviour as well, I'm going to say amongst boys, I'm going to generalise, but amongst boys, has nearly been normalised. So her son, it really might not have clicked into his head that what he was doing was not okay, because when you're hanging around your friends and everybody is speaking about girls in a certain way and everyone is talking about getting nudes off girls or whatever, I'm not saying it's okay, but it does become normalised.
Just because it's normal and it's common doesn't necessarily mean that it's appropriate, but I think you're absolutely right. If it's happening in your peer group, if it's happening all around you, then of course a young person who is trying to navigate this complex environment, especially if they're, you know, if it's very new, they're probably going to do what the people around them are doing. And, you know, I think in this particular situation, it boils down to a question of consent and understanding what consent is, how to gain consent, and what you do if you don't gain that consent.
So if we go back to Sam, that girl was interested in her son and he butchered it, right? Like, he was this nice girl probably and he absolutely stuffed it up by hassling her. So what would you say are some of the red flags to look out for? So, for example, for a teenage boy, they might sort of pull themselves up and think, okay, hang on, I've just sent 3 messages in a row and the person I'm sending them to, let's say a girl, is going stop or no. I should be going, what am I doing here?
The primary point is teaching about consent and that it's essential to seek consent. So you always ask and never assume. So a red flag in a situation where, you know, nudes are being sent and sexting is occurring is, has consent been sought and gained at the very outset of all of this behaviour? Another red flag would be, you know, respecting boundaries, and hats off to the girl in this situation. Her behaviour was textbook perfect, you know, how to deal with someone who is sort of hassling and harassing you for nudes. But she's very clearly stated her boundaries. She said no and repeatedly. And then she said, the consequence is I'm going to block you. And, you know, again, hats off that she followed through and she did block him.
And I think a red flag is you don't want to be in a situation where you are trying to convince somebody to do something around sex, right? Including sending nude photos. If you think you have to convince somebody who's already said no, that's a red flag. There are legal concerns around sharing or procuring sexual content from minors, aren't there? It's against the law to have photos, nude photos of minors on your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. We really need to educate young people about the risks of engaging in that sort of behaviour. So image-based abuse covers a range of different things that involve sexualized images and content and non-consensual sharing of nudes and things like that. And it is quite complex to kind of navigate.
I think kids are told all the time, it's illegal, you can't do it. And they're all doing it and none of their friends are, you know, that they can see are getting charged or getting in trouble. So they don't take any of that seriously. But I think we're only going to see these laws be taken more seriously and to ramp up. So I think sitting down with your kids and looking at the legalities around this stuff is really important, even if they roll their eyes. So I think both sides, if you've been targeted in that way, you want to know what your rights are and what steps you can take. And if you've got a phone and you don't have a great internal handbrake, then you want to be spelling it out to your kids, the kind of legal trouble that you can get into. I want to thank Sam for being so open with us about what is a very tricky situation, and Sophie Lee for sharing her expertise. Before we go, I've got some really practical tips you can take away in your goodie bag. Number one, definitely put limits on phones in private spaces. Nobody is taking nude photos in the kitchen. It's all happening in bedrooms and in bathrooms. So we absolutely want to limit phones being in bedrooms overnight, which is a disaster. Sam only discovered this because she had the password to her son's phone and was able to check. And I would say there are thousands of parents who have no idea of what their kids are doing online. It's important as well to have an ongoing dialogue, obviously, about sex, respect, and consent at home. As parents, we cannot hand that responsibility over to schools. And I guess the last thing that I'd want to say is that nothing ruins your life forever, and that our kids are more than their worst mistake. They are going to screw up. They just are. And they're especially going to screw up with all of these devices and tech in their lives. So there is more to them than their worst mistake. They have the ability to recover from any screw up and still go on to do great things. I've got a little favour to ask. Jump on your school parent WhatsApp group and tell them all about this special teen series of Parental as Anything. You can even share the link. There are a bunch of great resources in the show notes for navigating technology and consent. And if you need help with your teen, send us an email to teens@abc.net.au. I read all of them. I want to hear from you. And remember, you are not alone. Parenting teens is hard. What an understatement. And it can feel lonely and overwhelming at times. But you are doing a great job. We're all doing our best. This podcast was recorded on the traditional lands of the Turrbal and Yagara peoples. Parental as Anything Teens is mixed by Anne-Marie de Betancourt. It's produced by Hannah Riesch and Josie Sargent. The supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and Alex Lolbach is the executive producer. And make sure you follow us on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Molly.
And I'm Carl.
And we're the hosts of the kids' podcast, Short and Curly.
Each of our episodes tackles a curly question about the world.
Like, should we try and bring back extinct animals?
Is it your fault if your room is messy?
And is it ever okay to lie?
Plus, we have a lot of fun along the way.
Well, we make a lot of fun of you, Carl.
Oh.
It's a podcast to get the whole family thinking and talking.
Short and Curly. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.